Hi, pals. It's me, Duncan Trussell, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast 100th episode. Holy shit, 100 episodes. We did it. And to celebrate the 100th episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, there were a lot of things that I thought I was going to do. I thought, for example, I was going to train a raven to give a little speech about how incredibly grateful I am to all of you who continue to listen to this podcast and to all the guests who have radically changed my life over the course of these 100 episodes. But too expensive. It takes a very long time to get a raven to say anything. Plus, they're creepy birds, and anytime you get around them, it definitely means that someone in your life or you are about to die. So instead of that, I decided to do another Duncan Trussell Freak Out Challenge for this 100th episode. I have a request for you. I have something that I want you to do to celebrate the 100th episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, and here it is. This is a clip that I found. Patton Oswalt actually tweeted this, and I just think it's the most brilliant, simple way that you can put yourself into a magical occult state without having to obtain dimethyltryptamine or mushrooms or do some weird drug or go to the Amazon or find a witch to hypnotize you or drink goat's blood or any of the other ways to put yourself into that state. Here it is.
Hi, folks. My wife and I are from Tacoma, Washington, and we wanted to share with you a way that we've come up with to help homeless people in our area. For a number of years now, we've been handing out fast food and cups of coffee to the homeless, but we were hoping to help them on a more permanent basis. So we came across this website that gave us this idea.
Have you ever been driving down the road and saw someone on the corner with a sign asking for help, sleeping on a bench or in a doorway? Digging through the garbage at a restaurant or outside a fast food place? Have you thought, how can I help? Your heart's been touched, but you feel helpless or think, what can one person do? This is what we do. We make homeless care backpacks, and we do it for $20 or less per backpack. I shop the thrift stores for used backpacks that cost $1 to $3. The article said they shouldn't be too nice or they might get stolen. It doesn't matter if there's any design on it, as long as it's sturdy and it closes well. At the thrift store, I also look for beanies and warm scarves. Beanies usually cost about $1, and warm scarves can be $1 to $2. If you can find mittens or gloves, that's a great place to get them. Also socks. We hit the Dollar Tree for most of the other items we put in the pack, like personal care items, toothbrush and toothpaste, deodorants, bar soap, wet wipes, razors, combs, hand sanitizers, toilet paper. This is also where we get the basic food supplies that we put in there. Cereal bars, granola bars, ready-made chicken salad, tuna salad, saltine crackers. We do fruit cups, applesauce. We try to do small containers of natural fruit juices. We do bottled water. But one of the most important things for this pack is peanut butter. Peanut butter is a great source of protein and lasts a long time. These are the food items that'll go in this homeless care backpack. These are the personal toiletry items that'll go in the homeless care backpack. And this is a whole group of the homeless care backpack for this particular kit. Here's a detailed spreadsheet of the items in each backpack. And as you can see, it's under $20.
So the items.
All right. No. You don't need to make a goddamn spreadsheet. I mean, what's the point? Spreadsheets are the antichrist of the digital world. Just forget about your spreadsheet. Make more backpacks, OCD loon. Now, as many of you know, I'm into Neem Karoli Baba, who is Ram Dass's guru, and just an amazing human. And somebody was asking him how to develop Shakti, because back in the 60s, when everybody was really getting into yoga and people were headed to India to meet gurus and saints and holy people, they wanted to, a lot of them weren't doing it because they wanted inner peace or tranquility. They wanted Shakti. They want what's considered the sort of spiritual powers that you can get from practicing meditation. This is not a new idea. A lot of people forget that Hinduism and Eastern mysticism has so many systems of magic in it. It's amazing. Even Buddhism has magic within it. And not everybody starts meditating because they want peace or they want to develop compassion or they want to develop empathy or any of these things. A lot of people get into it because they want power. And that's okay. It's completely okay. In fact, you're invited to do that. It's good whenever you get into this kind of stuff to honestly know what you're doing it for. Now, the process, if you're doing a bona fide process, then probably along the way you're going to start realizing that power, real power, doesn't mean getting what you want, but becoming who you are. And you might drop some of the creepy, gothy spell casting stuff that a lot of us get into, but it's fun to play around with in the beginning. So if someone asked Neem Karoli Baba, how can I develop Shakti? And he said, help other people. That's the best way to do it. Serve other people. Now, I don't think that was just a misdirect or some kind of throwing water on the fire. I think he really meant, if you want to develop spiritual potencies, the first thing for you to do is to start helping other people. And if you do this backpack experiment, right away you'll realize that you've placed yourself into a kind of magical state. And I'm going to read to you, this is a cool passage from the book Postmodern Magic, The Art of Magic in the Information Age. Because here's a little component you can add to this backpack experiment to make it spooky. So this is an exercise that Dunn recommends doing. Find a place with a comfortable but fairly high amount of sensory stimulus, a coffee shop, public mall, or rock concert. Don't overload your senses, but make sure there's enough variety and activity for some of the sensory streams, the stimuli from your sense of vision, taste, touch, and so forth to collide, creating a sort of mental turbulence. Sit or stand comfortably, breathe regularly, and listen with all your senses, eyes, ears, tongue, and skin. Listen to all the sensory input and convince yourself that it is speaking directly to you. This is a sort of controlled paranoia, but unlike the mental illness, you can turn it off, and it's not in the least harmful or dangerous. Just imagine that the present sensory stream somehow whispers to you. Allow associations to rise without willing them. Perhaps you will sense yourself being either connected to a large conversation or being in a web of competing messages. Or maybe you'll sense the place itself speaking to you, telling you what sorts of magical work you can use it for. During the first couple of times, you may not have any such experiences, ending the exercise with nothing more than a vague and undefined feeling of well-being. In any event, when you feel you've done this exercise enough, about 10 or 15 minutes, although you can go longer if you like, come back and ground your experience. Grounding allows you to objectify the experience. This can be done by writing the experience in a journal, a painting, a picture, singing, or doing some other activity that makes a physical object or event out of your symbolic experience. So I think that you can use this exercise with in the process of making the backpack and or putting stuff in the backpack, getting all the various components for the backpack and giving it to another person. Because when you go out into public to get the backpack and get the stuff for the backpack, put yourself into this state. Listen as though everything from the moment you begin the process of making some of these backpacks or one backpack to give to people to the end of the process, that you are actually in communication with a higher intelligence. And so you can enter into this exercise with a question. You know, if something's been bothering you, if there's something you've been wondering, maybe you have writer's block and you need you want some inspiration, or maybe you're having problems in a relationship and you want to figure out what you can do to help the relationship out. Whatever it is, whatever's been troubling you, any question that you might have, anything that you're wondering, or maybe you just want contact. Maybe you just want some unexpected bit of information to come to you. Go into it with that kind of intention, that kind of openness, something more than just going to help somebody. In a way, you're actually doing a kind of sacrificial ceremony in which you are offering up food to the gods. Because as they say, we're all God. We've just God that's sort of broken off in all these little meaty bubbles that we call our individual bodies. But when you go through this thing, you're literally creating a kind of offering that you're going to give to the universe in a literal way. You're going to give this to a person who doesn't have access to showers, who doesn't have easy access to bathrooms, who's probably addicted to some kind of terrible drugs. Who knows? Someone who's having a really difficult moment in this specific incarnation, you're giving them an offering. It's real. This is just like going into a temple and offering burning incense or offering a fatted calf to the gods. Only in this sense, it's either, what you're offering is going to bring real comfort to another human being. So it will put you in a magical state, and in that state, open yourself up to some communication. And if you want to symbolize the thing publicly, go to duncantrussell.com and let us know what happened during this experiment, what your question was, and what answers you got. So that's how I would like you to celebrate the 100th episode of this podcast. Keep your eyes open for some answer from the universe as you're in the midst of doing this act of generosity and helping. And I have a feeling that you will get an answer to your question. If not, you gave some pudding to a guy who's addicted to heroin, and that's nice by itself. So Natasha Leggero is here, but first, let's do some business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Amazon.com. Thank you, whoever just bought a gigantic TV using the Amazon portal. I really appreciate that. I do get a readout of the stuff that you freaks buy. You freaks. You scare me with your Amazon purchases. My God. Reading your Amazon purchases is like reading the goddamn, reading the fucking set list for Breaking Bad. What are you guys doing out there? Vials and beakers? Feel like alchemists and witches listen to this show. Pumpkins, wolf heads, hands of glory, incense cones, raven cages. What's going on out there? What are you guys buying this stuff for? It makes goose bumps spring up in my skin to imagine all the strange, nefarious things you people are up to out there. But keep using the portal. If you need sacrificial daggers, globes to hold fireflies in to hang over your pentagram and underneath your castle or whatever you're doing, go to the portal. Amazon.com gives us a small percentage of everything that you buy. So if you're going to go to Amazon.com and buy something, please go to DuncanTrussell.com, click on that portal, bookmark the portal, and anytime you go through Amazon to buy something, textbooks, fingernails of hanged men, hogs blood, whatever it is you're using, go through our portal, please. We're also brought to you by Shore Design T-Shirts. Shore Design T-Shirts creates some of the softest shirts known to man. These shirts, if your baby cries too much, consider putting a Shore Design T-shirt near the baby or on the baby. If you want to see your grandmother smile again, living or dead, put one of these shirts on her body or on her corpse. And if she's dead, you will be amazed to watch as you stand there with the sun just rising in that graveyard that you broke into, as you stand perched over your grandmother's coffin. And the moment you pull that shirt over her desiccated, worm-eaten corpse, just look at the corners of her sweet mouth and you'll see the smile on Grammy's face again. So, shoredesigntshirts.com, go there, put my name in, you will get 10% off. And finally, we're brought to you by a wonderful company, Squarespace.com. Squarespace is one of these new next level web design companies that allows you to build a aesthetically pleasing, professional-looking website. They have everything that you need to create a website. So they have a shopping cart function. They have the ability to do podcasts and video. Whatever it is that you want to do, you can do it by going to squarespace.com. You don't need to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to hire a web designer who has rotting dead hamsters lodged in the greasy folds of his fat. Is that what you want? Do you want to have a meeting with somebody who has dribbled bits of vomit into their beard because they have been snorting Adderall and cocaine all night long, coding some porn website? They don't even see you when they're looking at you in the meeting. All they see is a monkey with a unicorn's head and money falling out of its ears. You don't want to deal with that crap. And listen, I know there's good web designers out there. I get emails from time to time from disgruntled web designers who feel like I spend too much time on these commercials saying that web designers are out of their fucking minds or crazy. There are good web designers out there, just in the same way that there's good priests. But there's also not so good priests, and there's also not so good web designers, and their fingers both smell the same, if you know what I'm saying. So, go to squarespace.com, put my name in, Duncan, and you will get 10% off your membership at squarespace.com. They have a 15-day trial membership. You can try them out to make sure that it works for you. But I'm telling you, these guys have everything that you need to put together a website that's going to look like you got a professional web designer to do it. Squarespace.com. Put in my name. 10% off. If you sign up for a year, they give you a free domain name, which is pretty cool. It's like usually those are like $9 or $8 or something. So think of a crazy domain name. I guarantee that no one has purchased happybloodbucketsinthedungeon.com or redfacedangelpussy.com. It's there for you. Just grab it. Just grab it. I just publicized those names, so they're going to be very, very popular. Go to squarespace.com, sign up, use my name as the code. You will get 10% off. Go do it. Support those that support this podcast. Won't you? Oh, and before I forget, there is a shop located at duncantrussell.com with plenty of stickers and posters and t-shirts and all kinds of stuff that you can use to decorate your home. You can use it to decorate your dorm room. You can use it to decorate your friend's dorm room. These make wonderful gifts too. Trust me, if you want to impress your girlfriend, give her a Duncan Trussell Family Hour t-shirt and a poster. And she's going to, I don't know. Don't do that, actually. Don't give that to your girlfriend. Give something like perfume or a necklace or something to your girlfriend. But don't, probably don't give her. But for your, I don't know, give it to her. Why am I stopping you? Give whatever you want to whoever you want. But most importantly, do this experiment. Listen, do it right now. Stop the podcast, or while you're listening to the podcast, go do this experiment. Record your thoughts. Record what happens to you along the way. I want to hear about this. You can post your reports at duncantrussell.com. Please, for this 100th episode, this is all I ask. Go put food in a backpack and give it to somebody who needs it and let me know what happens. I'm just curious. Please. I have a hunch it's going to be a lot cooler than you expect it to be. We have an excellent podcast for you today. For those of you who are new to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, way, way, way back in the day, I did a podcast with Natasha Leggero called The Lavender Hour. And that was when we lived together, and then we broke up, and I started this podcast. But Natasha and I, since the breakup, have become good friends, and we're actually contemplating maybe doing a kind of limited edition Lavender Hour again at some point. So we talk about that in this episode. Natasha has, you can go to natashalegero.com. She's a famous comic. She was on that big roast of James Franco. And she's been on The Tonight Show a million times. And she just sold a pilot to Comedy Central. So lots of amazing, well-deserved things are happening to Natasha. So please now send out your love. Open your third eyes. Let your guardian angel fly to wherever Natasha Leggero is and rub her feet, comb her hair, and sing her sweet little songs. Please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Natasha Leggero. We're here with Natasha Leggero. Thank you so much, Natasha, for being on my podcast.
Great to be here.
What do you think of that marijuana? Do you feel it? You got high on getting dug with high, so you can admit that we're stoned. I like it.
On Bob Marley.
I mean, come on, be creative when you're naming your weed. Bob Marley is the least creative name for marijuana.
I mean, that's actually, I'm surprised you bought that. I would just not buy that based on name alone.
I didn't buy it based on the name. I bought it based on the
what your stoner, pusher told you it would do.
My pusher. Hey, man, this stuff's great. Do cocaine. More money in cocaine. No, I don't know. I'm always perpetually disappointed by the names people give marijuana. It's such an amazing drug, and they just shit all over it with their awful names.
How long, I was thinking about this weekend, how long have people been smoking marijuana? Because I was at an art museum in Cleveland, and I was looking at the old Egyptian art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I wonder if they were smoking pot then.
They found a mummy.
Oh, because there was all these pipes. Like, they had all these old pipes, like, from, like, 400 AD.
Yeah, a
long
time.
And I was like,
time.
What were they putting in those pipes?
Weed.
You think?
They found in China or Japan, like, I can't remember which it was. They found this, like, frozen blonde-haired mummy, and it was old. And it didn't make sense, first of all, that there was a blonde-haired mummy in China from how far back it was, but then in a pouch there was weed.
Wow.
So it was some kind of shaman or who knows, but it's been around for a very, very long. It's ancient.
You know, they would bury them in those domes, in the pyramids. They'd bury the mummies, and then they'd set booby traps so that no one could, like, come and, like... Oh, because they would be buried with all their possessions.
Yes.
And all their gold.
And their slaves.
They'd make their slaves go with them, too?
Sometimes. That makes you brighten up. Yeah, the slaves would, I think, get buried alive.
No.
Yes, with the mummies.
I think I'm talking too loud.
No, you're not. You're doing great.
Okay.
Yeah, the slaves would, you know.
Buried alive.
Yeah. Some of them. Yeah, you would get buried under, because the idea was, I guess, that in the after, they really thought there was an afterlife. So they figured that in the afterlife, you'd just be hanging out anyway. And
I wonder if Yolanda would go to the grave with me.
How sad. Yolanda, for those of you definitely couldn't possibly know, is our maid. We have a mutual maid that we still share. I lost the dog, but we kept the maid. We kept sharing the maid.
Does she clean your house? She sends her sister to mine.
Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she sends Rosa to mine. I don't get the professional Yolanda clean. It's every once in a while she's there, but I've only been doing it once every couple of weeks. I think I'm getting cleaner.
You are. You're very clean. You are very clean.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I guess I'm getting old.
My dad is super clean. He's kind of obsessed with cleaning, but he's an old man.
I think it's a byproduct of age or something. Well, you start realizing that when things are clean, then you tend to have better ideas.
I think you've truly just not gotten old, but started growing as a person.
You think that's a sign?
Yeah. Like, you've become more conscious of it. You know, you're, like, more conscious of yourself and your mess, and, like, feels good to clean up after yourself.
I love cleaning. I'll tell you, there's nothing better than marijuana and Swiffers. I don't know what it is, but there's something so satisfying about getting stoned and using a Swiffer.
And there's nothing worse than a dirty house. It makes you depressed.
Well, you, yes, it's depression manifests in the form of a dirty house, for sure. That's how you always know when you go to a friend's house, if it's really messy, you know they're not doing great.
Yeah.
Even if they say they're doing great, they're probably not doing great if their house is incredibly messy.
Yeah.
Because you're not finishing cycles. Like, when you have a messy house, it means that you're only doing half cycles, so you're taking things out, but you're not putting them away.
Right.
It's really cool to watch.
It affects your psyche.
Yeah, it really does. I'm sorry I live in a kennel. There's nothing I could do about it.
Isn't there another room that you used to do this in? It's like more...
Oh, it'd be just as loud. That's just the neighbor's dog. Did he stop? No. Those poor things.
So they just sit outside?
Yeah, they just throw them outside. They don't seem to think that they're... The way we look at dogs, my neighbors don't look at dogs in the same way.
And so they just think they're outside dogs that are always outside chained.
Like cows. Like, you just let them graze in the back. They don't need human interaction. Just give them a yard. Some water.
Maybe that's what you're supposed to do with dogs. Maybe we shouldn't be treating our dogs like they're celebrities.
Come on, you could never put Mayor Cutie in a yard for a day. I'd love to see you try that. You could never do. They are celebrities. Some dogs are celebrities. Some dogs have such incredible energy, don't they? Mayor Cutie has the best vibe.
Dogs do have their own vibe.
Yeah, it's all that matters. It doesn't matter. They don't. It's so cool because they don't have to have a language. They just are... Purely some vibe.
Their energy.
Yeah. Just a little wave of love energy. That's amazing when you see how powerful that is in one little thing.
And when it's bad, it's also bad.
Yeah, that's really bad when you get cursed with a when you're saddled with a bad dog. It's really fucked up. Well, there's no bad dog. It just means that the dog, who knows? Rescue dogs quite often are fucked up. You know?
What are you going to do? Get your dog at the Glendale Galleria? That's where Red Band got his dog. He did. And it has like an underbite. Like he bought it for like his girlfriend at the time or something.
He has a really sweet dog. That's for sure. And he didn't get it. Did he get it at Glendale? I thought
remember
he got
it. We had a dog party and that dog came and it had an underbite and it just sat there really sexy and every dog tried to hump it.
Every dog.
Even Mayor Cutie, who's never tried to hump anything.
But to me, what was eerie about it was that the dog stood in line.
To fuck. Do you remember that dog? That mall dog.
But they were in a very organized line.
And they were all rescues. And then he has this dog from the mall. That every one of our dogs wanted to fuck. Like, I'm talking like 9 to 15 dogs waited in line to fuck that dog.
You mean it was like Uptown Girl for Billy Joel?
Totally. And there was like, and sex doesn't seem to matter. Like, boy, like all the girl dogs were trying to fuck it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing about dogs. They all kind of try to fuck each other.
Yeah. And humans.
That's true.
And humans. It just seems to be part of existing on the planet is that you just... Try to have sex with everything.
But they all have the dogs all have their balls removed, right? So I wonder how much they still want to do it.
It doesn't stop my dog from humping his frog.
But does that mean it's a sex feeling he's feeling?
Yeah, it looks like it. In his eyes, the intensity of focus seems to indicate that there is some sex feeling still there.
Fox has like a silly, chill vibe. It's good.
He's a very good dog. Very good. Just needy. I don't know what to do. You love something so much and then you think, you know, you want everything to be better for it constantly. When you love a dog, you just always want to improve its situation. That's how you feel. So you always wonder like, shit, am I giving him enough attention? But then how much attention can I give him?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Maybe you're supposed to chain up your dogs.
You're not, Natasha.
I'm just saying, I think we treat our dogs too nice.
You're just mad because you've got a dog problem right now.
I do.
You have a dog problem. I have friends who've had dog problems. Have you ever read... What's that Edgar Allan Poe short story about the guy who kills his cat?
Oh, I don't know. I should read that.
You're thinking about doing something bad. This podcast, they're going to end up playing it on Nancy Grace.
No, I don't have any problems. My only problem is that I spent the last 5 days in Cleveland.
Before we get to that, if you had a kid, do you think you'd be one of those drowning moms?
No! What are you talking about? I would not kill a child. I would love a child. You think I would drown my kid?
Only because there was a glint in your eye when you were... When just the idea of executing this dog. You want to execute this dog.
No,
let's
don't.
Face it.
No, I don't. I just said it's challenging. It's not... It's all the dogs. There's three of them. They're all like bad.
Three dogs is a lot. That's a lot. That's a pack.
It's probably like half of a kid. Like if I had six dogs, that'd probably be the same amount of work as a baby.
Like a baby. I don't know, man. You don't have... Yeah, I don't know what... The babies are a lot of work.
Dogs are too. I haven't really... I used to wake up and write every morning, and now I always wake up and walk the dogs.
Yeah.
It's like as soon as you add something to your life that you have to take care of, like something else goes away.
Yes, that's true. But then isn't the most important thing just helping?
Helping what? Dogs?
And people.
Yeah.
Isn't that always the best feeling where you're just, isn't that the hippie idea?
That's at least the time where you feel least guilty for life.
Yes. That's right.
Like yesterday when I was in Cleveland, I was like dreading the whole thing and I hated it. And these women came up to me after the show and they're like, we needed that laugh. It's been a rough month. And like her husband died and they were coming out and then they were, you know, like they just seemed so happy. And like I had already had two meltdowns that day because I didn't like the hotel they put me in. And like I got into a fight with a DJ. Like
a
I was
DJ.
Yeah, like I was not having a good week and
like
I was
morning
pissed
radio?
That I had to be performed. Yes.
What was the fight?
I really don't want to talk about it.
Please.
And then when I got on stage, I didn't want to be there. And then when people come up to you afterwards and say how much it meant to them, it's like, then you're just like, oh, I'm supposed to be here and trying to like do everything I can do to make it great.
Yeah, yes.
I'm not saying it should be an act of service because that's ridiculous, but it is like...
What, doing stand-up?
Well, I mean, just trying to like
is not an
be
act
nice
of service.
And spread joy and like do.
Well, see, that's the funny thing about the mind, right? It identifies whatever you happen to be doing, and that's the thing that can't possibly be an act of service to the universe. So,
what do you mean?
Well, like you're saying, you were hesitating to say doing stand-up comedy is service because you didn't want to feel cheesy or self-important. But the idea is that any activity, whatever it is a form of service. Whatever it is, if you make that your intention.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're doing a...
Gossiping, is that an act of service?
Yes, you can. Weirdly, there is nothing is off limits. In this particular conceptualization, nothing is off limits. And... as long as your intention is service, strangely, yeah. Like you can gossip, you can be yourself, but it's just this one addition to it, which is that now you're trying to make your entire existence, profession, relationships, problems, happinesses, an offering to the whole or something. So of course your stand-up is a service, definitely. I mean, God, can you imagine, like, just think of any... I remember the first time that I came into contact with Terrence McKenna and how comforted I was by that. And I was like, my God, here's someone who can articulate this psychedelic mind state in such a beautiful way. And I know exactly what he's talking about. I don't feel so crazy. He was doing a service. That was a service. In stand-up, I'm sure there's people out there who hear your stand-up and feel connected to somebody. You know, it makes them feel like it gives them a little spark of hope. How is that not service?
I mean, I hear you. I definitely, when I watch certain people, it makes me feel really good.
Oh, God, it's such a great thing. Doug Stanhope. Every time I listen to Doug Stanhope, I walk away feeling better about my life. And then just like, God, I got to work harder. I got to work harder. But his whole...
Why do you feel better about your life? Because you're comparing it to his?
He's so depraved, man. He's like, that's what I love about him is he's like, he's shamelessly, perfectly himself. Depraved, artistic, brilliant, and
he has an outlet.
Yes.
So a woman can still like live with him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's amazing. But if that's not, you can decide to not call it a service because it does sound snooty and weird. If you're like, my art is my service to my species, then you sound like a dork. But, fuck, then what is your art if you're not serving people with it? Because you're doing it for people.
No, but then what happens? Well, what happens is when you start doing it for money.
Right.
That's like where things start to like, because that's different than doing something that's not your favorite thing in the world.
Right.
Because then like
things get confusing.
Selling out and like doing things strictly for money. I mean, it's very tempting.
To do things just for money.
To do things that you think aren't funny or whatever that can be like hidden for money. But then I don't know. I mean, maybe you Picasso mean like would have done some advertising things.
Well,
I'm just saying it would be great to just be an artistic, free person who did whatever they wanted and only could stand behind what they... I mean, there's been very few artists like
what
that.
Would you, Woody Allen, what would you be I like? Guess? If you were like that, what would you be like? Like, what would your persona be if you were completely uninhibited and there was no posturing out of fear of the repercussions from the business side of things?
I mean, I'd do what I'm doing. I'd interview people in my hot tub, I guess.
That is pretty awesome.
And like try to do like a special that's kind of weird and like do it, you know, pitch shows, I guess, that you think would be funny.
You know, I just look at like...
Oh, but you're saying what specifically would the persona be?
I don't know. No, I just mean we all feel mildly... You maybe... This is a revealing thing about you. I'll delete it if you want to. You love skinny dipping. I bet nobody knows that. You love it. You're like, I've never seen anyone so unafraid of taking their clothes off and going swimming. And it was so cool that it was kind of inspiring to me because just like, wow, God, what an amazing person to like really just not care.
I think that's a quite a common...
I don't know. I've never been around it, but I thought it was, I think that's really cool. I think that's really cool, but...
Do you feel ashamed of your body?
Yes. Yes. Terribly ashamed of it. I'm working on it. I'm exercising a lot now, but throughout my entire life, a streak of shame has just run through just because of my dissatisfaction with my body.
But then when you go to these nudist places, like if you go to Esalen, the people who are sometimes the grossest seem the most cockiest walking around naked. But maybe it's a Northern California thing.
I think that act of self-forgiveness where you just commit to forgiving yourself for how you are right now. When you're around someone who's done that and they're not ashamed of their body and they're fully there, it doesn't matter what their body looks like. They're right. Amazing.
Of course.
They're little saints walking around, you know? Like, look, I've forgiven myself.
But have you ever seen Native Americans hanging out? They didn't wear clothes.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean I think Native Americans probably all wear clothes now.
Well, no, but of course now, but like where we all descended from.
I think probably, they,
like
didn't
cave
they?
People didn't really wear clothes. Like it's not a natural thing to wear clothes.
Right.
Like I don't think it's dirty or like
no,
weird.
I don't think it's dirty or weird. It's just
that in Europe, like women don't wear shirts on the beach. Like they have just their tits hanging out and it's not weird.
Right. Yeah, no, it was just cool. It was brave. I haven't witnessed that level of eagerness to be naked.
I wasn't eager to be naked.
And completely fine with that.
But let's do a caveat that it wasn't in front of people. There was nobody else there.
Yes, there was. Yes, there was. When we went to, what was it called? The place across from Post Ranch Inn. What's that called? Ventana.
There wasn't a lot of people there, though.
There was like this big fat Indian man floating there.
Yeah, but he was just there all day with his girlfriend.
But there
it's
were
not like there,
there
was like 20 men and I just wanted to get naked. There was like a few random laid back couples.
By the way, not, yeah, I've never, I mean, the whole like being in a spa.
I think you have a problem where you are ashamed of the human body.
I have a problem in that I can't, yes, I'm neurotic, so I have
it's very American.
Yes, and I have a version of myself I'd like to be physically that I'm not. So
you're doing too much like aesthetics on it or something.
Yeah, if you're out of shape and you see that you're out of shape and you look at yourself in the mirror and you haven't been exercising, which thank God I have been exercising, or I might not even have the guts to talk about this right now, but if you're not exercising and you're eating the wrong stuff and you look at yourself in the mirror and you see that you're out of shape, there's the aesthetic problem, which is quickly followed by a deeper problem, which is like, I can't control myself. This version of me is not just a reflection of my physical form, it's a reflection of my lack of will, my lack of being able to actualize my desires into the world. I'm seeing my soft magic here. I'm seeing like...
What does it take? To get disciplined.
To get disciplined?
Mm-hmm. Like the times in your life where you were the most disciplined, what was the thing that happened that made you really go with it?
Prayer. You have to pray. You have to do a little magic ritual because if you're in a bit of a lazy slump, what's happened is your ego has taken control, and it's no different than being possessed by a demon. It's this thing outside yourself that differs from who you want to be, and it's somehow managed to like gain control of your will. So even though you know you want to go running, you know you want to go to the gym, you're just laying on the couch or laying in the bed or playing video games or doing some depressed thing or whatever it is, sleeping too late. The will is not in control. You're possessed by a demon. So you pray, and then the next day, you'll just end up in front of a treadmill. It always happens. And then once you start feeling how good that feels, you get addicted. Then you start exercising all the time. Ideally, I guess. You look at you. You look great. You look younger than when we were dating. What are you doing?
That's not true.
It's true. Like where I feel suspicious. Like
I told you I put breast milk all over my body.
I would believe that. I think you're doing some kind of stem cell stuff.
Stop it.
You look so young. You look young.
I've always looked young. When I was 30, I looked like I was 14.
No, you look young.
And my brother looks young.
Well.
I just have genes, dude. I guess. I don't know. I'm smoking right now.
You're smoking cigarettes?
I mean, I won't right now because you had cancer.
Are you seriously smoking, Natasha?
Oh, you're that judgmental about it.
From a vapor pen?
I mean, I do that sometimes, yeah.
And packs?
I don't buy packs. No, I have like 4 a week. Hello?
Don't smoke cigarettes. That's ridiculous.
You think that's real bad?
What, are you work for the fucking tobacco? This is now I get it. You probably work for the tobacco industry, and this is your secret viral marketing thing, which is they're like, listen, anytime anybody...
4 cigarettes a week?
Anytime anyone says you look great, you say, and I smoke. This is some kind of viral marketing campaign. You work for Philip Morris now or something?
No. I would, though.
No, you wouldn't.
Why not?
Would you really work for Philip
would
Morris?
Would you, like, I'm sure you have a price, like if Heinz wanted to hire you.
I have a price.
Yeah, if Heinz Ketchup was like, Duncan, we love the thing you do. We'll give you $6 million. To do 2 viral, but they're going to be everywhere.
You are the Francis Underwood of comedians. You have to watch Game of Cards. I feel like I'm with Kevin's...
Game of Cards?
It's my 2 show. I keep mixing them together. It's my 2 favorite shows. House of Cards.
By the way, you're the second person today to say that.
What?
Game of Cards.
Everyone's saying it. Two great shows.
Wait, so who's Francis Underwood?
That's the main character. That's Spacey.
Why am I like him?
Just watch it. You're not like him completely because you have a kind heart, but
what were we talking about that made you say
that? Working for a fucking tobacco company.
How and then much you're would like,
I bet you have a prize.
You don't have a prize?
I don't have a prize.
Okay.
I don't think so.
So to be something really cheesy, you wouldn't do it for $6 million. Your face everywhere. Heinz, the voice of Heinz. Or like.
No.
Smuckers.
I wouldn't do it.
$6 million.
I'm not going to do it.
$100 million.
I can't let down everybody. I don't want to let people
down. Oh, really? $100 million? You'd be as rich as Miley Cyrus.
What am I going to do? I have everything I need right now. It would be fun. I'd have a submarine. I could probably live on the moon.
Yeah, like you'd be hanging out with Richard Branson.
No, man. I don't know. Look.
Is that his name?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
No, but I'm just asking you what your price is.
It's not money. It's not a money thing. That's for sure.
But most people, it's money.
If it was something where...
So when we talk about service, I'm just telling you, most people are into money.
Well, if somebody told me that they would give me the power to walk through walls or turn invisible or give me some kind of mystical power...
But what if in the future, if you're super rich, you can start to like, you know, do more space travel and you'll be able to do like cooler things?
The whole thing about a price and the...
Like in the future, you're going to want money. Because things are going to start splitting off.
Right.
Don't you think?
Did you join the Illuminati somewhere in between us breaking up and now?
Am I wrong?
I want to join. What do I do? Tell me.
Not in it.
I've put this out on every podcast. I want to join the Illuminati.
I am not in it, but there is a masonry like right down on Glendale.
If I'm being approached right now or this is some form of initiation, yes, the answer is yes. I'll spit on the cross
of Illuminati.
What do you want me to do? Just tell me. Send me an email. I swear I'll do it. I don't think you're an Illuminati.
So basically, you don't do things for money. That's good. You're ahead of everybody.
I do things for money. I like money. I'm not saying I don't like money. It's just I feel pretty happy where I'm at financially.
It's nice to think of the idea that you have what you need.
Yeah. I don't feel very... I'm not saying that I wouldn't like a big like payday of millions of dollars for the novelty level. Like the... You know, you look at like Hearst Castle, for example. And
you could have like big parties.
Yes.
But you don't really throw parties.
Well, I mean, this isn't exactly like we're not in a ballroom here. This is an old house, and I don't know.
If you had a ballroom, you'd throw more parties.
If I had a spacious, sprawling estate with servants and endless food and chemists and flotation tanks and lecture halls.
That would be a full-time studios.
And... you know, different, like a studio where people could do podcasts from or something like that, then that would be amazing. Like I would love that because I would spend my time manufacturing like potent empathogens and psychedelics and then flying in people who seem like artists to hang out indefinitely where there's swimming pools and steam rooms and spas and food.
And I think in the old days you could do that maybe without like tons and tons of money. But I think now you'll have to have a lot of money to do that.
Those
like Ram Dass, they all like hung out or like in Berkeley when they were doing mushrooms for the first time with Leary. Like they were all like living on like compounds and having like, you know, Harvard, you know, Ram Dass coming, Harvard teachers, like, talking about spirituality, and they were all tripping and living off the land and, like, sleeping in each other's houses.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to, like, take a big leap to, like, think of doing that. People would think you were crazy.
You have to start being more social.
Yeah.
For sure. But, yeah, it would be, yeah, I think that the potential that money brings is overlooked by a lot of wealthy people because... I don't think wealthy people are evil or selfish. I just think they, the pleasure that their compass points in the direction of a pleasure that's less than what they could actually be experiencing. I mean, fuck.
What do you mean?
What I mean is, like, when you mix, what, some amazing thing happens when you get artists and spiritual leaders and entrepreneurs together, or innovators or pragmatic people. Like, but they're all of them are like, represent some real truth. And you mix them together in any kind of place for more than a few days, like a week or 2 weeks. Then you throw psychedelics into the mix. So now it's like you're just trying as much as you can to transfer information from one type of person to the next. You could create some pretty serious waves in society. You can create some major changes just by that. You don't have to even have an agenda. It's something about the, there's something in the universe where if you start mixing good things together, something even better pops out. It's strange. They call them think tanks.
What's an example of one of those?
A think tank? Well, it's like a salon. My favorite example of it is Jack Parsons.
Who's that?
Jack Parsons was a famous rocket scientist. I think we've probably talked about him before, but he was a Thelemite. Like, he was a devotee of Aleister Crowley, and so he would, they say that he would say, like, occult prayers before the tests of his rockets and stuff. There's a crater on the moon named after him. He was like he somehow innovated some new form of solid-state fuel is what it's called. But he's fascinating only because he was into the occult, and he was a scientist. So this was during the, in Los Angeles, there was this big spiritualism thing that happened with the, what are they called? With like Krishnamurti and the, what are they fucking called? Anyway, there was a lot of like, there was a big spiritual movement happening. The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes, all that stuff was like bubbling around at that time. Like, people were really into it. And so.
Oh, there was probably like a whole name for it.
Yes. Well, there was, yes.
It's basically like self-help. Oprah, Deepak Chopra, but like the first incarnation.
Exactly. And
it was like the power of positive thinking. Like, a lot of people, like, I remember I had a friend in New Jersey and her dad had read that book and he became like a millionaire. Like, I think a lot of people were like reading these books in the 40s, like these like positive thinking books.
Yes.
And in ways like no one had ever thought about it like that. So I think there was a movement then.
Yes.
Like Phyllis Diller talks about like her whole life changed when she got one of those positive thinking books, and she just read it and like wrote down everything she wanted and just focused on it, and just like it was like this new like, you are your thoughts.
Yes.
And I think we kind of have lost track of that a little
bit. We lost track. Yes.
Because it works and it's powerful.
You've used it before?
Yeah. I mean, it's just
hold on, before we get into that, because I do want to talk about that. Jack Parsons.
Can you do a commercial?
Jack Parsons had scientists and occultists and writers at his house all the time, and he would do it so regularly that they called it the Parsonage, because he always had people staying with him, always had artists with him, always had writers with him, always had spiritualists with him. And one of those writers was L. Ron Hubbard, who ended up stealing or taking Jack Parsons' wife from him, like seducing Jack Parsons' wife, and it's a whole drama about it. It's fascinating. But anyway, so yeah, that was a mix of people that's legendary and will probably be remembered for a long time. Created, maybe was part of what made Scientology one of the fastest growing religions.
I mean, he was certainly doing some positive thinking.
But you've used, what techniques do you use? You chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Still?
Yeah, I like to chant. I like to meditate. I love listening to Alan Watts. I've been just like listening to him on the planes, like while I sleep, like all his lectures. I have him on a like an old iPod that I just carry around, and he's so like smart.
Yeah, I love him.
He's so cool.
Because so, you're a successful person.
I like listening to like him talk about all the religions. And.
But do you attribute, clearly you must think that your ability to focus or to use that kind of, I don't know what you call it.
I feel like I'm negative a lot of the time.
You do?
It's just trying to like shake off your negativity, I think, whenever you feel it. Don't you think?
Yes. Yeah.
Because when you really put things into perspective, like when I went to Cleveland and like a few people told me some stories and they just seemed like they were depressed and sad. And I was like, I'm so glad that like.
That what?
That sounds really rude.
What?
I'm just glad I got out of the Midwest.
Right.
Like I can't think that I mean, even the fact that I had to spend 18 years there feels like a waste of life. Now, if someone's in the Midwest, they're going to send me hate mail.
No, I don't. I don't think that it's the.
It's not for everyone.
It's not the Midwest you disliked. It's the.
It's the worst part of the country.
But if you're in
the South, is so charming where you have a place where your parents live. Sorry, go ahead.
If you're in love in the Midwest, if you meet someone and fall in love with them, if you figure out some way to channel the Godhead and become a great writer, if you get really good at playing guitar in the Midwest, if you like become obsessed with that and find perfection manifesting in your life through your musical ability improving, the Midwest is not that bad. Like it doesn't, if I'm in love, if I'm experiencing love, or if there's like the novelty of like some new thing happening, that transforms my surroundings. So much more than going from point A to point B transforms my surroundings. I could fly to the Midwest and be just as depressed as I am here. Or I could fly to the Midwest and like experience love, and the Midwest turns into a great place.
Well, I experience a shortness of breath while I'm there.
That's because you associate it with it, with you associate it with being trapped.
Oh, right. That's probably why.
Right? Because you came here and you went to New York and then you came here and you had this like, you've had a, look at you. You're like blowing up right now. You just sold a pilot to Comedy Central. You're doing a new special.
I was just reading or watching on YouTube. They had like a Vivian Leigh documentary. So I started looking at all these women's like biographies, and Vivian Leigh, like she was 18 or 19. And if you wanted to get away from your family, like in the 30s and 40s, you had to like marry somebody, right. And then you had to get in his family. So then like she was married at 18 and she had to like convince that guy to like let her go to acting school.
Right.
So it's like women just to like, they like this. Now I think it's easier to just get away from your family. It's kind of expected. Like what city are you going to move to?
Right.
Like I think before plane travel was so crazy, you kind of just stayed.
Yeah.
Unless you got someone who was like rich enough to like, you know, move your whole family, socialites, you know?
Yes. Well, that, you know, I got this email from someone today, and he's like kicking pills, and I don't know, he's in a real like crisis situation kind of, but in the email he was talking about like leaving Utah, like, oh, one day I'll get out of Utah. And I remember,
you know, I've been to, that's like one state I have not been to.
Beautiful there. It's, I bet. Beautiful. But you know, really he doesn't want to leave Utah. He wants to feel autonomous. Mm-hmm. And so he thinks that if he leaves Utah, he'll have this sense of autonomy. But you can have that sense of autonomy without making the symbolic, ritualistic, geographic shift. Even though if you want to make the shift, do it. It's fun to travel. Relocate. Go somewhere else.
Yeah, but having it be like shitty weather for like 8 months out of the year.
Right.
Like where it's ice cold, snowing, raining, dreary, bad. You know, like you live in a place that's like beautiful every day.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like 8 months, it's like you got to go scrape the ice. It's like you can't walk your dog. It's everything. It's like you just get depressed.
Well, you get depressed because you're resisting what's happening. That's what depression is. It's a resistance to what's happening. It's just these phases of surrender to like, well, here I am in the fucking ice with my dog. You can make any place great, for sure. For sure. I said this, think about doing something you love with someone you hate. or doing something you hate with someone you love. And look at the shift in those two things, you know? Because like you could, whatever it is that you love to do, some delicious food, some restaurant you like to go to, imagine sitting there with your worst enemy, some moron or some yappy fool who flies in the face of everything you think is okay. Who knows, maybe a convicted pedophile or something. Just think of the worst thing possible and imagine your greatest happiness and how much it would be meaningless, the activity, the food. But now imagine, like, if some asshole told you and your brand new sweet love, who you're so in love with, to go shovel waste out of a latrine together. It's going to be kind of okay. It's going to suck, but there's going to be a part of you that's like, man, at least I get to be with him.
So love is more important than money or success.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it's the only thing that matters, really. And then money and success, if you have love in the midst of them, shit. If love makes a latrine seem a little bit like paradise, what does it do to having wealth or success? It makes it that much more incredible. Oh, man, it's the best possible way to be. If you can pull it off. But good luck. It's not easy.
It's hard. That's probably what people in LA, like what we get in other ways, it's probably what we lack more. Like real love. Well, because people must have it more in the Midwest who have children.
No, you have to... Every time I start doing these cheesy meditations where I sit and imagine that I am an ocean of love, and then I imagine that the me that I am, my ego and myself, is like a wave on this ocean of love. The more I do that, the more I do catch little glimpses of the possibility that sounds so crazy, which is that you can feel that thing that you think you need a family for, or a person for, or a job for, right now, times a million, because that's all you are. That's the idea. But a family sure helps. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love a family. I think that'd be so nice to have a family. And
don't you have a family with your fans?
I think that it does feel a little bit like a family because, and the people who have been on the show or have become really close to me, but I don't know that. I know what you mean, that there's a certain feeling that comes into the room at Christmas. When you're sitting with your family, opening presents.
Right. Like, I remember the first time I'd always known people from really good families. And I remember it was like, I was living in New York with some girl and I was staying there and it was someone's birthday who lived in the house. And she like went and bought all the ingredients and baked him a cake. And she was really nervous about it and then put candles in it and then threw a big party. And like, as she was walking down the hallway and, you know, like getting everyone to sing, like you could see like, oh, she's just like really comfortable celebrating things and like, you know, just like an openness to like not slack and just like feel obligations to like put people in great moods. Cause that obviously puts someone in a great mood.
Yeah.
So I think when families work, it's like a symbiosis or something.
It's amazing.
Like where they're like, I mean, it's what you do with your friends probably. Like yeah. Try to like lift, be like uplifting. I mean, that's certainly what I try to like, even with just the dogs, like trying to like make everything like happy and healthy and, you know, it's like a, does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Or you just do it for yourself and you're Marc Maron and Jen Kirkman and Duncan right. Trussell.
Duncan Trussell's still in. I haven't decided this is the way I'm going to be. It just happens to be the way that I am now.
You're a selective breeder like me.
A selective breeder.
Yeah, like some people are just breeders. It's not bad. A lot of them are like really ambitious people. What?
Oh, man. You made me laugh so hard.
Can I get some water?
Yeah, hold on. We're back. So, do you think we should do the Lavender Hour again? Are you being serious about that?
Sure.
Really?
I mean, why not?
It seems impossible. I can't. How do we do it? I can't imagine it.
Easy for me. You just have to give me like 2 hours a week for me to come over to your house.
That's it.
Yeah.
What do we create a different... What do we do?
Same thing.
You want to do that for real? I would do that.
Yeah, but I don't know how much time your other podcast takes up.
Somebody's got to edit it. I don't have time to deal with it. Someone has to deal with it.
Unedited. Unplugged. Lavender Hour unplugged. No editing. Sometimes they're 20 minutes. Sometimes they're 2.5 hours.
I'll do it.
No editing. We don't have the time. No time to edit.
Well, someone still has to upload it and stuff.
No time to upload either. I just want to do them.
Don't even upload.
I mean, Dustin will do it.
I would do that. I think I would do that. This is fun. We have a good rapport. This is good.
Now that I got my chalice back.
I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you did that.
I can't believe you had my silver chalice.
For like a year and a half.
It's mine.
So what? Give it away.
No, I want it. I got it in Paris.
We went into my living room and Natasha snatched a chalice off my fucking altar that
it's
I used
mine.
To meditate.
It's mine.
That's a... A chalice is important in some of the things I do. And I can't believe you're snatching it away. But fine, I'll find another chalice.
How often do you meditate?
Every day.
And what meditation do you do? Do you already talk about this on your podcast?
Oh, I thought you said masturbate. Meditate? Only like 3 times a year.
I mean, the focal point of your house is meditation. You walk in and you've got your shrine and then a little carpet and open space and a cushion.
No, I meditate every day.
But what, do you do the transcendental meditation? Did you go with me when we went to the transcendental meditation?
I haven't done that.
And it was with Scary Spice?
No.
Scary Spice was in my class.
I didn't know there was a Scary Spice.
And this guy gave me a mantra, and then the price was you had to pay a week's wages.
What's the mantra?
Well, you're not supposed to tell people.
But you're not in the organization, so you can say.
Yeah, but isn't there a reason why you're not supposed to tell people?
I don't know. What's the worst thing? Can you get sued or something? Is it like...
I mean, I think you're not supposed to tell people because there's only like 6 mantras and they tell you it's personalized.
Yeah, that's what you do if you're running a factory. You want to sell stuff. What's the mantra?
It's I-E-M-A. By the way, I don't do it. I never could figure it out. Like I always, that's why I like chanting better because it's like more active. Like, you know, you're doing it. Like I would just think I-E-M-A and then I would just like be thinking of anything. But I think that there's chance for women. I think there's chance for certain ages. Like, so you shouldn't use the same chant I use.
No, I
know. I do think they're like for.
Yeah, like, guys, don't sex. Chant that. What she just said, don't chant that.
I'm just telling you what he told me.
If you do that, it's...
But this was like a fancy transcendental meditation teacher, that's all.
No, I know, I understand. I know that's part of their thing, and I think there's a lot to be said for
it. And
that.
I haven't learned at any length. I took like 1 4-week course.
I know people who've benefited from it, for sure. So I think that there's something to it, but I don't think it's necessary. I think that you can do... you can just meditate. That's all I do. I follow my breath. That's,
or like what you say, pray. That's probably the easiest for people.
You can do both. You can take a cushion. You build a little altar, a place to focus yourself. You put it wherever you're going to be comfortable. You put pictures of things that represent love on that thing.
And it's very like personal.
It's personal. Then you pray in the morning. For what you want to be like or what you want. Or
you know what's really great is if you read Benjamin Franklin's autobiography.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to find it. It's so great. Like what he says he does, like his schedule.
Hold on, let's hear it. I'm going to pause while you look it up.
Okay. I wish I had the book.
Why pause it? I don't know why I wanted to pause it. Like we can't talk now while you're looking it up.
Well, it's never nice to be on the phone during a podcast.
Hmm. You're going to love House of Cards so much.
Ben Franklin's daily schedule. Let's see here. Oh, this is it. This is so good. Okay. Hold on. I just have to wait for... Okay. Just press pause for a second.
What?
Just press pause.
Oh, fine.
So Ben Franklin, what he does, his schedule, says at the top, the morning question, what good shall I do this day? 5 a.m. Rise, wash, and address powerful goodness. Contrive day's busyness and take the resolution of the day. Prosecute the present study and then breakfast. Okay, then at 9 a.m. he starts work. Then at 12, read.
Wait, go back.
What?
What's, do the whole thing. 5 is what?
I can't. I'm trying to get
5 a.m.
Rise, wash, and address powerful goodness. 5 a.m.
Address powerful goodness. That yeah. is cool.
Contrive day's business and take the resolution of the day.
So what's
he,
that?
He's what? Got. A, he gives himself a resolution every
contrive
day.
Contrive day's
which is on
business.
The other side, the morning question, what good shall I do this day? So
the resolution of the day. Mm-hmm. That is fucking cool. And then 9 rolls around?
9 rolls around, he starts to work.
4 hours he's been doing this. That is so cool. That's meditating for 4 hours.
Exactly. He's like just pondering.
Wow.
Bet he's got a wife. All right. 9 a.m. he starts work. He works until 12, and then he reads and overlooks his accounts and dines.
Nice. He doesn't eat lunch. He dines. And looks at his accounts. Looks at his bank account.
And then at 3 o'clock, he goes back to work.
Yes. Wait, when was lunch?
12 to 1.
What's
he dined.
What's he doing from 1 to 3?
He's doing his...
Because so
hold
far...
Hold on. 1 to 3, he's working.
Oh, okay. I see.
So he's working. And then he's working again from 3 to 6. And then at 6... Hold on. I have to find one that I can read. At 6... Hold on. This is going to be good.
At 6... Make a slave, give me a blowjob.
Put things in their places. Supper, music, and diversion. Sorry.
Diversion.
It's all blurry, so it's very yes. confusing. Or conversation.
Yes.
And then I can't read this word because it's too... Hold on, I think it's important. It's something he does for the whole day. Is this interesting?
Yeah, it's cool. I can't wait to hear what he does for the whole day.
At the end.
For the whole day.
Wait, hold on. Look, so you can't see.
Hold on, I'll read this.
Can you like download it so it's not like, it's like a bad picture of,
yeah.
you know, like I wish I was reading it out of the book.
Let's see, from 10 to 2, drip oil into the mouth of the bat god. That's weird.
Give
what
it to me.
Mean?
Give it to me.
From 2 to 4. Rake my nails against the neck of my favorite slave.
Give it to me.
4 to 3. Wait, I'm losing.
Why do you think he had slaves?
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
He is like a Puritan. He just has like a
look
great
it up.
Work
Google
ethic.
Search. Google
he
search.
He didn't have slaves.
That's funny if you have slaves and have a good work ethic.
Well, anyway, he examined it. I told you it would have been worth it for you to just pause it and let me find a good version
ben
of it.
Ben Franklin, slaves.
Oh, okay. Evening questions start at 8.
Yeah, slaves. He had slaves.
Okay,
sure
evening questions. What good have I done today? And then here's all it says at 9 p.m., examination of the day. That's what it was. And then at 1, fall asleep. And he's waking up
there
at 5.
There is no doubt that
he only needs 5 hours
there's
of sleep.
There's no doubt. Well, that's because he has slaves. There's no doubt that Benjamin Franklin owned slaves. His newspaper in the 1730s often featured slaves for sale.
What good shall I do today?
He was a slaver.
You think he's like saying to himself, what
Wait,
good shall I do today? And then he's like
today I
whipping
shall,
slaves?
Today I shall meditate on powerful goodness. Hey, what's up, Ben? Listen, man, I'm going to sell a couple of humans, and I was wondering if you could give me a good deal in your paper to sell them in.
So what type of good
yes.
was he talking about? If he was like...
I don't know. The problem is when you've had a slave after that, you just kind of stop listening.
I don't know. I think that like the way people have evolved.
If you feel depressed, talk to Ben. He's a very positive guy. He's going to give you a lot of hope and inspiration. Does he have a slave? Stolen from his homeland? Taken in a boat to another country and forced to work 10-hour days? Yes. But he's positive. He's like a positive guy. That's the fucking crazy thing, isn't it, Natasha? That contradiction in everything.
But like, what about women's rights? People used to think it was normal. Like, if you were alive 100 years ago, you would probably think it was normal that your wife couldn't vote.
You would.
So it's like, maybe we're just evolving. Maybe he was like still trying to do good, but he just didn't. I don't know.
I love to think that you don't need to like look at society to know how to be. But I think that might be naive. But I mean, like, you know, like with the war in Afghanistan, we know that's wrong. We know we shouldn't be there at this point. We know that.
And nobody cares.
And no one cares. So
everyone's just like hashtagging at midnight or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So can we judge Ben Franklin because he had slaves when every single time we buy a candy bar, some percentage of that money goes to evaporating other people in different countries for corporate interests? Probably not. Doesn't mean that everything Ben Franklin said was wrong. Just because from time to time he'd probably go down in his underwear to the slave quarters with an oiled bullwhip.
Oh, come on.
And pluck out the hottest slave.
I don't know.
And shove her down over a stump.
What if there was like people who were like
shining ass and the moonlight was
glistening. What if there were people who were like
while he whipped her and whipped her.
What if it was just like having like a maid?
Until his Ben Franklin
cock. What if they were really nice to them?
Was swollen and hard and he sprayed Ben Franklin
jizz. Not every person raped their slaves. I mean, it's just we're a deprived species. It's terrible. We've all been slaves.
No, we haven't.
Didn't white people used to be slaves at the beginning of our country?
No. No.
Well,
there were no.
According to Howard Zinn, there
were no white slaves. That didn't happen. It's a weird thing. You can only do it to black people. If you were walking down the street, you couldn't grab a white person and be like, you have to work for me now for no money. They'd be like, no, I'm white. This doesn't work on me. But a black person.
I mean, you're from the South. We went to your family's house and it was like an old plantation. Remember where the relative lives?
Yes.
They like rebuilt that new house, but it was like on a, because your mother, when I went to your hometown, like, your mother's maiden name was, like, all over the town. Like, she was, like...
Yes.
Her family was, like, the four... They're, like, the four...
There was... It was a... Yes.
Family
a
of
successful
the South.
Family.
Yes. Yeah, like, the... It's, like, called, like, the Fendig Journal. Like, your parents' name is in...
Yes.
The newspaper.
Yes.
The name of the newspaper.
That's true.
So, basically...
So what?
So I'm just saying you come from like a very like rich Southern background where like slavery was like a real thing.
That's true.
Probably with when your father was a child, did he have slaves?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. When he was a child, he had slaves.
Wait, did he?
When my dad was 8 years old, he had 2 4-year-old slaves.
Hold on. Are you kidding? Because I think your dad could have had slaves. Did your mom have slaves? Did your grandma have slaves?
No.
Grandma Clyde didn't have slaves.
You remember all of this.
Does your Grandma Clyde have slaves?
I have to
slaves?
Tell you this. I'm touched by the fact that you remember my grandmother on my father's side's name.
Because she gave me all my silver.
That is wild.
No, it's because all the silver, which I still have some, your silver cutlery set... is from that woman.
Do you miss me?
Wait, Duncan, I have a question.
What?
Did your Grandma Clyde have slaves.
No!
I don't believe that.
My grandma Clyde did not have slaves that wasn't legal. She probably would have if it were illegal. You would probably have slaves if it were legal.
You don't want slaves? What are you talking about?
You would
about?
Have a fucking slave.
No, I wouldn't.
I would bet $100,000 that you would have a slave.
What is a slave? An assistant?
No. If it was... You seem like somebody who'd have a slave.
I mean, that doesn't even make sense. It honestly doesn't.
I just can't believe humans did that.
It's just such very a, hard to wrap your mind around.
It really is.
I mean, when you see people saying, like, separate water fountains for black people, it's just like,
it's
what? Like, we were all, like, imagine if we were living right now as we are and that was happening. We would go crazy. We would create the 60s. But now...
What do you mean we create the 60s?
I mean, you would just... You know that thing we were talking about? Like how... Imagine like living on communes. But if like something that wrong was happening in the world where like black people couldn't use your water fountain? This was like in the 50s.
Right.
Wasn't this in the 50s?
Yes.
Black people couldn't use your water fountain.
That's right.
I mean, wouldn't we be so pissed? Like you and me, if we were alive right now. We would be so mad. Like, you would just be like...
Right.
You would be like giving up society. You'd be like, the world is wrong.
Right.
And now, I just feel like we've... Yeah, I don't know, like... I don't know. It's just really sad.
I know.
Nobody cares.
But things are changing. It seems like the world's getting better. Marijuana's becoming
it
legal.
It is better. And and I think that people like us who were alive in the 60s made that better.
Right.
You know, they like made it so that...
We weren't alive in the 60s.
No, but I just mean like intelligent people who weren't like, you know...
I know what you mean.
Causing...
I think you're right. I think there's a imperative in every generation to recognize that thing that is so obviously wrong. So obviously bad, so clearly against what it means to be human, and then fight against that as much as you can.
But you just say there's wars going on and nobody cares.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, you can still resist. You can talk about it. There is resistance. You can vote.
Does voting help? Are you going to vote?
I don't know.
Are we going to vote for Hillary Clinton? Is that going to solve everything?
In the Ukraine, you look at what just happened in the Ukraine, and there is the truth, which is when the people decide something should change, it changes. You can't beat the people. Dictators cannot beat the people. There's too many of us. There's too many. You can shoot us, but we keep coming. That's the problem. So I think there's something very inspirational in that. But I don't know what the steps are in between there being slavery and there being no slavery.
There's no slavery now.
Right, but there's steps in between. There's all these steps. You have to be smart. There's just ways to make things happen. I think that with marijuana getting legal, it seems like someone, it's not an accident.
I mean, we're all slaves, really.
Do you feel like a slave?
I don't.
You don't?
No. But I do mean like corporate. Like
we're all slaves, really. Do you feel like a slave? Not at all.
No, but don't you feel like there's certain people who are just like kind of ruining their lives and just working for nothing just to like drive an expensive Jeep?
Yes. They're hypnotized people.
That's what I mean.
Sure. There are hypnotized people for sure.
I mean, if you allow yourself to be hypnotized.
You're not hypnotized.
No, but I mean, I think a lot of people probably are.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I'm hypnotized by other things.
Like what?
Hollywood, which is probably worse.
How are you hypnotized by Hollywood? What do you mean?
I mean, I'm just assuming. That's what I mean. Everyone must be hypnotized by something. I mean, I'm sure you're hypnotized by something.
I am.
What are you hypnotized by?
A lot of things. I get hypnotized all the time. I love it. When I get in a nice hypnotic state, absorbed into something, it's a blast. When you're really focused on it, I love it. Hypnotize the shit out of me. I want to get hypnotized till I can't get hypnotized.
If I was a singer, I would write a song like, I want to be hypnotized.
Hypnotize me.
Hypnotize me.
Yeah. I want to feel it. I love the trance state. I love it when I've been pulled in.
What's the last thing that hypnotized you?
It's, I mean, it's a girls big word.
Oh, just girls. Really?
Yeah, sure, of course. I get hypnotized by relationships. It's the worst. I get starry-eyed too easy. I end up just getting... I don't think it's going to happen anymore. I think that I'm free of it. But I, for a long time, I was very certain that...
But that's love. I think everyone who's in love feels hypnotized.
Yes, I think so. I think it is part of love. Falling in love's good. But I think that it's just there's some far more exciting idea that I'm playing around with right now, which is really weird, but I love it. And that's the idea that the whole universe is your lover. And that
it talks to you through circumstances.
Yes! Yes, yes, yes. That. Oh, that is such an exciting, beautiful idea. To just as a thought experiment to play around with. It's really fun. And then to imagine that, like, the people individually, as wonderful as they are, especially if you're in love with them, cannot be the only nipple in this dimension that you suckle love from. That the idea is that it's like the whole thing is one big love party. I've been playing around with that. I like it a lot. And my experience with relationships has just never been... It doesn't seem like fair to saddle somebody else with this type of responsibility a very romantic beta male might place on another person. You know, I know a lot of, like, guys who, like, didn't get love from their mothers, so they find a girl and latch onto the girl... And suddenly their relationship has become this oasis in a desert or something, where it's just like, oh, water. The lonely feeling's gone for a moment. So you get so fixated on that.
What does lonely feel like to you?
Oh, that's a great question.
Look at that little pitter-patter.
Gotta get his nails clipped.
Come here, little boy. He's sweet. He's a good dog. He's totally overweight, though.
He's losing weight, though. I'm feeding him less.
I mean, he is fat.
He is not fat!
He's fat.
He's not fat. He's a little pudgy, and I'm working on it, man. I've reduced his food.
Quarter cup twice a day.
That's what I've reduced it to.
See, now when we do the lavender hour, we won't even cut stuff like that out.
I'm not cutting that out.
So why do you need an editor?
What does loneliness feel like to you?
Cleveland.
Oh, was that bad? That must have been a mess, huh?
I just don't like being in the... I mean, like, the whole point of my life was to get away from that. And then when I find myself there for 4 days...
Why are you doing...
But it was fun.
And why do comedy clubs?
Because I'm working on a special. Oh, yeah. But, like, it was... But it ended up being good, but it's just like... It's just like throwing yourself out of your comfortability is important.
Yes, that's true.
You know? But then it's, sometimes I just want to, like, that's one thing Alan Watts talks about all the time.
What?
Just breaking away from society.
You, of all of the people I know, seem the most likely to do something like that.
Really?
Yes. Yes. You always talk about that, the whole breaking away from society, the... Going away from all of it.
But then I think I wouldn't be able to handle
it. Going to Alaska or something. Or like just... No, you could handle it. You could totally handle it. I was just talking with a friend.
Shouldn't there be just like cities living off the grid?
No, I know what you mean.
Then would everyone just be doing drugs?
I was thinking today. I was talking to a friend of mine. Look at your dog. He loves you.
Look how cute he is. Look at his hand.
Yeah, he likes to drape his hands over things. I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were fantasizing about the idea of just going back to college. Just enroll in college for 4 years. You have enough money to pay for it.
Was it Ari Shaffir?
No. But you suddenly you have this like chance to like just learn. But now you're set. Like if you had money, you're not even there to like, you're not learning to try to like cash in on a career. you're just learning. You're just there like, no, I want to learn about as much as I can about philosophy. I'd like to learn to speak French and I want to play guitar. So I'm going to spend the next 4 years fully immersed in my studies, just studying philosophy, writing. That's it. That's all I'm doing.
I mean, what's stopping people from doing that?
That's
But that's not college. What, studying philosophy and violin?
Yeah, it's called liberal arts college. That is college.
You went to a college where they taught you under a tree.
Yes. But wouldn't you love that, Natasha?
I have a piano lesson every Sunday. I do love it.
But it would be amazing to be on a campus with some of the smartest people on earth.
Yeah, but I don't feel like if I went to college, I'd be on a campus with smart people.
Well, you would if you went to like an Ivy League school or something.
Right.
Anyway, the whole point is the stuff that's important is like learning, absorbing, growing, evolving. That's where like the universe starts seeming exciting. It's when you're not doing that that things get depressing. Right? Is that a cliche? Did I just say a cliche?
I forgot what we were talking about. You're distracted
by my dog.
They distract me. That's why you can't have a child. You won't do anything else.
You're struggling with that right now. You want to have a kid, kind of.
I don't, though.
Let's hope he never listens to this podcast. Imagine listening to your mom on a podcast. And someone's like, you're thinking about having a kid. No, I never want that. I'd never want that. It would ruin my life.
How come all our parents just popped out children? Well, like that was no big thing.
They weren't thinking back then.
That's what I mean.
There was no
internet. People are becoming more actualized. They're becoming more conscious.
Yes.
We're becoming more conscious.
Yes, for
sure. Ben Franklin like wasn't conscious.
Right.
He like tapped into some aspect, but they weren't fully formed people.
Right.
I think. I don't know. Am I wrong?
I think we're still in the oven, but I think we...
We are definitely still in the oven, but at least like people like Oprah and Alanya Vincent and Deepak Chopra, like they're trying... Like they're like spiritual capitalists. Like they're bringing like... My mom watches it and she's not like a particularly religious or spiritual person. Like she like gets into all these quotes and like trying to think about things and like... It's like a whole movement.
Mindfulness.
Well, Wayne Dyer. Like it's like all, or Wayne Dyer.
Wayne Dyer.
Yeah. Like it's like a whole thing.
I just, you know, Patton Oswalt just retweeted this genius thing. It's really genius, which is it's a video that these people put together, which is like, if you go to Goodwill and you pick out a backpack, it's like $2. And then, go to the grocery store, go to like a dollar store, whatever, and put peanut butter in there and lighters and bread and vitamins, Band-Aid, hydrogen peroxide, like make it a survival kit. And then the next time you see a homeless person, give it to them because they can use it when they're out on the street. And I was like, wow, what a simple, badass idea. That's such a cool idea.
You told me once, and I did it, to give a chicken to a homeless person.
It was a great feeling, wasn't it?
A rotisserie chicken. Well, I couldn't find anyone, and I was walking around the park just looking for somebody, and you don't want to give it to someone who's not homeless.
Who'd you give it to?
Some, like, drunk Asian man. It actually didn't feel that great.
Shut up! You felt...
I walked around MacArthur Park with this fucking chicken. And then you have to, like, make eye contact, so you're, like, making eye contact with homeless people.
Why don't you go to, you know what you should do? You should go to the spring retreat in Hawaii, the Ram Dass spring retreat in Hawaii. You should go do that. I think you'd do well with that kind of thing. You'd love that. You need something like that, something like that, something outside the box. Why don't you do that? I'm not going. You can go. I won't be there, probably. I might be there.
That's going to be the future.
What?
Figuring out ways to do good.
Well, no, I mean, that's...
Honestly, I mean, what else are you supposed to be doing?
Making your future now.
You're just supposed to be like, oh, I want to collect money. I want to be buried with my possessions.
It feels so good.
I want to be buried with my slaves, live slaves. Bury them with me.
If you want to really like...
It's like so out.
Go do the backpack exercise. Like if you want to feel tripped out, all you have to do is that spend 2 hours not thinking about yourself. So you could like make a 3 or 4 hour period in your day where you go and buy this backpack, fill it up with food and give it to a homeless person and watch. You can watch your ego react to this day. And it's very funny because your ego won't like it. Like you'll go and do it and you'll watch yourself thinking really selfish thoughts a lot of the time. Like, oh, look at you. Wow, I'm really good. You might think that I'm really being a good person right now. You might think puffed up thoughts. And in Buddhism, those are called the daughters of Mara. Because when the Buddha was gaining enlightenment, Mara threw like fireballs at him initially and he smiled and it turned into flower petals. But the second temptation that the Lord of Death presented the Buddha was his beautiful daughters that he could marry or that loved him or... And I remember, I've always wondered about that. And then I read Chogyam Trungpa, this Tibetan Buddhist philosopher. And he's saying, no, the daughters of Mara are the part of the mind that when you're doing something good is like, look at you. You're so great, aren't you? You're wonderful. You're so helpful. You're like a little Gandhi.
Right, I know what you mean. You don't want to feel that.
You know, it's not that you don't want to feel that. It's that you will feel it. So you all you're doing when you do this.
That's how I feel when people are like, we had a hard time this week. Thank you for doing your comedy.
Yes.
You start to feel like, oh, I'm doing so much work.
And you are. You are doing so
but
much
you're
work.
You're not. Like I didn't, you know, sometimes I don't put any energy into it.
You put a lot of years into it. But the daughters of Mar, the idea is you're not trying to like not be that way. You're just trying to watch the whole spectrum of the egoic interaction with the activity. That's all. You're not trying to change it. You're just like, whoa, look at that. I'm thinking about how great I am. Or look at that. I'm thinking about what a fraud I am. Or, oh, look at that. I'm thinking about how this is, I wish someone would see me doing this. Or, oh, look at this. I feel so blissful right now. You just look at the whole spectrum of the experience. Because if you're like most people, you're a selfish person. And you don't spend any time helping anyone else. You spend most of your time just helping yourself. So if you just spend 4 hours outside the box, just experimentally trying to like put together a backpack with nice stuff in it for someone who's not going to have a shower that day, it'll put you in a really weird psychedelic state. It's cool.
Will you turn it off for a second? I want to tell you something.
Yeah. I wish you could have said that because that's really sweet. Okay, everybody, that was Natasha Leggero. Go check her out at natashaleggero.com. Sorry for the abrupt ending. The memory card filled up, and I wasn't able to properly wrap everything up. So this is the wrap-up. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us for 100 episodes of this podcast. Have a great week. Report back to us at duncantrussell.com. Hare Krishna.